This is Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker. Well, the government shutdown is over, at least for now. About a half hour ago, President Trump announced a deal to reopen the government until February 15th, which puts an end to the longest government shutdown in history.
I will make sure that all employees receive their back pay very quickly or as soon as possible. It'll happen fast. I am asking Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell to put this proposal on the floor immediately.
After saying for weeks that he would not reopen the government without money for a border wall, the president today said he would soon sign a bill to reopen the government temporarily while he negotiates with Congress. He said a bipartisan committee of lawmakers will be formed to consider broader spending before that February 15th deadline. Well, joining us to talk more about this is Massachusetts Congressman Jim McGovern. He's in Worcester today. Hello, Congressman. Thanks for being with us.
Happy to be with you.
So what's your reaction to this announcement from the president today?
Well, I'm relieved, and I'm relieved especially for the 800,000 federal workers who weren't getting paid and still showing up to work. But this is the same deal that was on the table in December. So it's frustrating that the president decided to hold all these workers and indeed the country hostage, over a temper tantrum. But the bill that Mitch McConnell will bring to the Senate floor is what we sent them over, a while ago. So the government will reopen and we can have a discussion on border security and ways to enhance our border security. I mean, we can, cameras and sensors and drones and increased infrastructure and more personnel and more asylum judges, all those things I think are appropriate. But I think the president realized that the American people didn't think it was worth shutting down the government over a stupid wall. In fact, 70% of the American people thought it was a bad idea.
But, he said those same things, though, today. I mean, a wall, not a concrete wall. He said a steel wall, and there will be drones, and there will be technology, and there will be more judges. But that's still his plan. I mean, what's the difference here, except it's going until February 15th?
Well, I mean, the difference is that he caved, and I think that's important. And I think I'm glad he did, because I think what he put the country through was unconscionable. But the deal is that I think it'll be more difficult for him to want to shut the government down again. And look, there are areas where we can come together, Democrats and Republicans and even people in this administration, on ways to enhance border security. But why would anybody want to spend, it's not just $5 billion, it's tens of billions of dollars on a wall that by almost all accounts of all the experts I've talked to say would be useless, is a waste of money. We ought to spend that money in a way that's more constructive, that indeed does deal with some real issues on our border.
You know, Congressman, you say, he caved. But I want to play a little piece of tape here from the president's press conference today that suggests maybe he caved now, but he's not going to cave in 3 weeks. Let's listen.
If we don't get a fair deal from Congress, the government will either shut down on February 15th again, or I will use the powers afforded to me under the laws and the Constitution of the United States to address this emergency.
Congressman McGovern, what do you say to that? Is that an empty threat?
Yeah, well, look, I mean, I thought what was interesting was that he added that he will try to use his executive powers to be able to get what he wants. And if he tries to do that, we'll see him in court. But the bottom line is that, Democrats and Republicans agree on a wide range of issues when it comes to border security. But there is dissension on this wall, which is a waste of money. It is ineffective. And it's not just Democrats who feel that way. There's some Republicans who feel that way as well. This was a campaign slogan that the president used during his campaign. And during his campaign, he said Mexico was going to pay for it. Well, now he's asking the taxpayers to pay for it. And we've seen from the poll numbers that the overwhelming majority of Americans, Democrats, independents, Republicans, do not want this. And so the government's open. That's good. And people can get paid. That's a good thing. This should never happen to begin with. This was an embarrassment. And it should never, ever happen again.
Yeah. So, but We're hearing the same debate again. So you said what there are areas where both sides could come together on this.
Right.
Give me two of them.
I mean, increase personnel on the border, upgrading our infrastructure. Some of the facilities that we have on the border are falling apart. Drones, cameras, sensors, more asylum judges to be able to, adjudicate the backlog of asylum cases. I mean, those are things that I think we all can come together on.
Hmm.
That's a wise investment of taxpayer money. What the president is suggesting, again, is a press release, is a slogan. That is a waste of money. I appreciate, the fact that he, sounded very much like he did. It sounded very much today like he did yesterday. But the important thing is that he opened up, that he's allowing for the government to open up.
Hmm.
And what we have been saying from day one is that the American people shouldn't be pawns in this debate. Open the government up, pay the workers who are serving the American people, have some respect for them. And today, I think he saw the writing on the wall, and he's losing this in the public opinion polls. He finally acquiesced and basically asked Mitch McConnell to pass a bill that, we could have passed in December.
Just briefly, Congressman, in terms of cost, you might be able to come together. You might be able to say that there are things that you do think make sense to improve border security. But there's a big discrepancy here in terms of what that might cost. President says $5 billion. What do you think the other side might say?
Well, he's saying $5 billion for the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're saying is that we're happy to invest that kind of money in things that will work and not a wall. And we will have this discussion over the next few weeks without the government being shut down. And I think the Democrats and Republicans can come together. The question is whether the president, will abide by what the bipartisan consensus is, or whether he'll, listen to some right-wing talk show and then change his mind at the last minute. I mean, look, this has been so frustrating for so many of my constituents and for people all across this country. This was unnecessary. I mean, the spending bills that we're talking about were bipartisan. Some of them passed the Senate unanimously. I mean, there was no controversy on any of these things.
Mm-hmm.
He just held all of these agencies and all these departments hostage and the American people hostage over a temper tantrum. And it has been harmful to this country, and it has hurt a lot of our workers in this country, and it is frustrating as hell.
So are you optimistic?
I am optimistic that we can avoid another shutdown. And I think that is, that is something we must insist on. And this is not the way government should work. There'll be disagreements. The president has to understand he's supposed to be the commander in chief, not the whiner in chief. And if you don't get your way on 100% of what you want, that doesn't mean you just shut the government down. It means you work and you negotiate as hard as you can, and you get the best deal that you can get. And Congress is an independent branch of the government. We are not a rubber stamp for the president. He has to deal with us. He has to take into consideration what our priorities are as well. So, we ought to move forward with the intention of trying to, find common ground, but we also ought to move forward with the intent that this can never happen again. This was unconscionable. This was reckless. This was stupid. And again, I'm glad that it seems to be over with for today. But it has been frustrating for a lot of people in this country.
All right, Congressman Jim McGovern, thanks so much for being with us.
All the best.
I want to continue to talk about this with our Week in Review panelist today, Tom Keene, former Boston City Councilor and a regular contributor to WBUR's Ideas and Opinion page. Cognoscenti is with us in studio. Hi there, Tom.
Pleasure to be here.
Also with us, Reverend Mariama White-Hammond, pastor at New Roots AME Church in Dorchester. Reverend, welcome back.
Good to be here.
Well, you guys picked a pretty exciting day.
Oh, yeah.
Nothing going on much, huh? I'm wondering
if we're free to fly again.
Well, let's first hear a little bit more, because this press camp... press conference from the president happened less than an hour ago. We've got a piece of tape here from the president announcing once again, in case you missed it, a 3-week deal to reopen the government. The president said it would be open until February 15th. He put an end to the longest government shutdown in history. Let's listen.
Walls should not be controversial. Our country has built 654 miles of barrier, over the last 15 years, and every career Border Patrol agent I have spoken with has told me that walls work. They do work. No matter where you go, they work.
That's President Trump at a press conference earlier this afternoon announcing the end of the government shutdown, saying negotiations will continue, but they will include a wall. Tom, it doesn't sound like he's saying anything different than what he said before. What gives here?
He is not saying anything different, but we've had the passage of time and we've had a shutdown. And it's one where the Democrats held strong. The Republicans were the ones who started to cave. And most importantly, Trump's numbers started to go down in terms of his favorabilities. I think that's what might make this different. That's why I think Congressman McGovern is probably right that there will be a huge reluctance on the part of the president to expose himself yet to further damage, and huge reluctance on the part of the Republicans in the Senate in particular to expose themselves to further damage. I also think what he has in his back pocket is he'll declare a national emergency and he'll fund it this way. And so what will happen is you'll have this two-step process. You'll have a permanent spending bill passes because he's going to be basically using his executive power. And then simultaneously, you're going to have challenges from the Democrats against him using this and declaring this as a national emergency. And we'll fight it out in the courts rather than the Congress.
You know, I want to talk about why we think this happened today. You know, there's been a lot going on. We heard, obviously, earlier this morning from the Federal Aviation Administration, right, that there were delays in air travel because of what they said was a slight increase in sick leave. And there were concerns about public safety and about our airport safety. And, you know, we here at WBUR have been speaking with local folks affected by the shutdown. I want to play a little bit of tape here from a woman, Amy Chittum. Her husband's in the Coast Guard. And when we spoke with her, her husband had not had a paycheck. Earlier this week, we spoke with her, by the way. Her husband had not had a paycheck in about a month. Let's listen.
I think that holding people financially hostage is wrong, and it needs to end. If we really want border security, enlarge the Coast Guard, enlarge border security for the other agents that work. They are the wall. They're the ones who are stopping the people from coming across the waterways and into the ports.
Mariama White-Hammond, I'm just wondering, were these concerns from the 800,000 workers, do you think, a big issue here in getting to where we got to today in this announcement of the end of the government shutdown? Were there security concerns, all of the above? What do you think?
Well, I mean, I think in the very beginning, we have some strong systems in a number of places. But, I mean, I think everybody knows that there comes a point at which if you don't, you know, make sure that those systems are well funded and they have what they need, that they're going to start falling apart. So I think, you know, I was at the airport on Monday. I think people going through were kind of well aware, like, how can I be asking this person to check my bag and I know that they're not getting paid? So I do think, yes, it was, you know, the speaking out is, you know, it's unconscionable that Coast Guard, active Coast Guard agents are going to food banks, you know, to feed their family. And so I think that, you know, you have this sort of these images sort of beginning to mount and the concern that what if you have not enough TSA agents to open one day? What if you start having not enough air traffic controllers to actually make sure that planes are landing? Mm. There comes a point where if you push it to the edge that a catastrophe happens, you're going to get a kind of blowback that will not be short-lived. And so I think that there was, to some extent, a recognition is that if you push this too long, something's going to happen, and people are going to blame that on the shutdown. And ultimately, if lives are lost, you're going to have a real tough time.
Right, but is this a big loss for Republicans here? I mean, is this like a big defeat for them, saying, okay, we lost? Thoughts here?
Yeah, well, you know, I think that's really complicated. I mean, I think that the reality is that they're behind a leader who marches to his own drum, maybe that none of us can hear the beat of, right? And so you have a challenge where, you know, whether people like it or not, he's become the leader of that party. And I think that there are, you know, I have friends who are Republican that are struggling with, you know, what do you do when one person, to some extent, is holding hostage the entire party and he's, you know, he's the face, right? Mm. Like, how do you negotiate that? So I think that the soul searching that Republicans have to do around this is not new soul searching, but it certainly has been pushed to an extreme.
Yeah, I less than characterizing this as a loss for the Republicans, I would characterize it as a win for the Democrats, and in particular for one Democrat, Nancy Pelosi, who really showed her mettle, really showed her skill. She outdueled Donald Trump, the master of the deal, and she beat him thoroughly. And I think that he is complete. She has shown the power of someone being in control of the House and of what happens with divided government. And she's really shown that she can go toe-to-toe with him.
All right. Well, we'll see what happens from here. You're confident, though, that we won't see another government shutdown, that we'll see some sort of a deal. This isn't going to be, oh, you're okay through Valentine's Day.
Wow.
And then you might have.
I know.
I'm a woman of faith, but I have put aside predicting anything these days. Who knows what will happen?
Confidence, a tough term. I'll tell you how we could be confident about it. What we should actually do on a shutdown is actually shut down.
Right.
We shouldn't make workers come to work without pay. And I guarantee you that if we felt the pain of a shutdown rather than just putting it on the shoulders of 800,000 workers, but if we, the American public, felt the pain, if in fact on a shutdown airplanes couldn't fly, airports had to close, I don't think you'd have a shutdown of a day or more.
Hmm. Do you think we'll see a wall?
Do I think we'll see what?
A wall.
No.
No wall. Yeah.
No.
Who knows?
Oh, she's still not predicting.
Although I will say this. If there's a 40-foot wall, there will be 41-foot ladders that go
exactly.
on sale. So,
well, let's talk about some things close to home because we've had a lot happening this week. Governor Charlie Baker unveiled his almost $43 billion budget. Big focus on education in this budget. Let's listen to a bit of what he said when he made his announcement.
While our education reform package is a major component of our budget proposal, we're also making significant investments across the budget to build stronger communities, improve our transportation system, strengthen services for the most vulnerable, and protect the Commonwealth from a changing climate.
So let's dig into a few of those. First of those, education. The governor's proposal would increase the state's power to intervene in struggling schools. And this is controversial. What are your thoughts on this?
So it harkens to me back to the original education reform bill, which
right.
I think was 1993.
Mm-hmm.
And basically the deal there
Not
was...
Not that I was old enough.
And basically the deal there was the state will really step up and put a lot of money into education, but it's going to demand some sort of metric, some sort of reforms in response. And I think, you know, Charlie Baker was around then. It was one of his mentors that basically was involved in doing that. And I think that that's what you're seeing again. The reality is that the money the state gives to localities at this point has fallen behind given inflation and so on. And also seems out of whack in terms of where the actual need is for these education dollars. But I would have to agree that just to throw money at the issue is kind of – that's what a Republican like Charlie Baker is not going to do. He's going to want to see that the money brings results and is going to demand some metrics in return.
Mm-hmm. Mariama, what do you think?
Yeah, so I want to say I celebrate that it focused on the core issues that I think need to be looked at. I think it's been long overdue to really look at the funding formula. And I don't have a problem with accountability. One of the questions I want to sort of ask is, have these takeovers been working? So I also want to get clear, when the state takes over, has it really moved the needle and does it, you know, sustain?
Mm.
Because as someone who's seen some of these things, there's a big hullabaloo at the beginning and the teachers get fired and da-da-da-da-da. And I'm not always sure that it's sustained.
Mm-hmm.
So I would appreciate, and I think anybody who's going to do this should really look, are the kids that need help the most really getting served by this? If the answer is yes, then that is great. If the answer is that the turnaround schools actually just move a different set of students in or are able to only sustain for a certain period of time, then I want to ask some questions about whether or not the intervention works. And I'm not saying I know the answer to that fully, but I think there has been a tendency to assume that giving the state more power will lead to better outcomes. And I'm just not sure that I see evidence that that is true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't disagree with you in terms of the specifics of a particular strategy,
mm-hmm.
but I would say that since 1993 and when we had the reform bill, Massachusetts' educational system, as measured by international testing,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
has dramatically improved. We are first or second in the nation on almost any measure in terms of student achievement, and that's been a huge success. If we can continue to... Now, maybe that's just because we blindly spend money, but I think it's because we have been spending that money in smarter ways and demanding some outcomes from the spending of that money. We've had success so far. What I'm hoping is that this increased spending builds on that success.
And I guess I agree that there has been success overall. The question is, a lot of this conversation is about closing the achievement gap.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
And we did see a bump, but we have started to see some stagnation.
Right.
And my question is... I want to make sure that those children are well served. Hmm. And I'm not positive that the state has a better strategy than municipalities. I'm clear one way or the other. I just want to explore if we're doing the best to really get to those kids who are struggling the most, mm-hmm. which is what we say we want to do. We've seen the tide raise many, many boats, but there are still a group of young people that are really, really struggling.
Right.
The Globe's piece around the valedictorians.
Right.
You're talking about the kids who pushed their way and did very, very well and still finding themselves locked out of prosperity. So the question for me is, if the long-term goal is to educate our children so that they have access to the best opportunities, and we can't do that for our valedictorians in some instances, do we need to have a deeper conversation about what needs to happen? And I hope that this next infusion of resources will try to help us get to that deeper question, which, to be honest with you, and in my opinion, extends, it definitely needs to impact schools, but it extends beyond schools too, and beyond, you know, K-12 education. We need to have some deeper conversation about generational poverty, et cetera. And maybe there are other partners that need to be part of this conversation. I'm just saying, I'm glad our tests are improving. I'm glad our kids are doing better. And I'm seeing some things continue to be stuck that means we should have a deeper conversation about our strategy.
So this idea about the state perhaps having more control is something you're a little skeptical about.
Yeah, if it doesn't produce higher outcomes, then I don't necessarily think I don't think it makes sense. If it does, great. If we're stuck in some places, let's look at those places and let's really figure out what is going to support those kids.
Right. And the only thing I would add to that is that the problem of the achievement gap is not wholly the fault of the schools. The problem of the achievement gap has to do with a whole series of circumstances that affect the child at a very, very young age. Mm-hmm. That means that by the time that child goes to school, that child is already behind. So it's not the schools that caused it. And part of what I'd really love to see in something like this is an emphasis not only on the school, but also on the whole series of wraparound services. Mm-hmm. Social services, health services, food services to make sure the kids actually being fed well.
Right.
Or deepening our investment in early childhood. Like my question is ultimately, for the kids who have struggled, what do we need to do and how do we make sure that the money goes to making sure? Because just getting them to pass the MCAS is not in and of itself producing the fullness of outcomes we desire. Right. And so I hope we will have a more robust conversation.
Mm.
But if we go back to the governor's budget, so education was one pot of money that he talked about. He also, talked about climate change, and he's come up with this interesting proposal of a 0.2% increase in the deeds tax to use some of that money for climate change. He says it would raise about $1 billion over the next 10 years. He's also talked about taxing receipts on opioids. Manufacturers to use some of that money to pay for the opioid epidemic. This is a Republican governor saying the T word. What's going on here, Tom? I mean,
are you sure he's a Republican?
I watched
and followed the most recent reelection quite carefully, and I don't remember him mentioning that he was a Republican.
See, I think he's changed.
He was the most popular governor in the country. Remember that?
Yeah.
Well, I want to applaud the opportunity to say I'm glad he's putting revenue on the table. And I hope that a lot of other people will join in that, because I think one of the challenges is that when you say taxes, there's a whole chorus of people who will, begin crying. For those of us who want to make sure that, my house is in a floodplain, I want us to start talking about climate change, because it isn't going to last all the years that I'm putting into it if we don't do something now. Mm-hmm. So I think I will say, as a citizen, if we need more money to do what we need to do, let's do it.
It's interesting. I think we're going to see more resistance from the House than we're actually going to see from the governor's office in terms of new taxes.
And just briefly, speaking of taxes, Senator Warren, her presidential bid, she has a tax plan, an ultra-millionaire's tax plan, where she wants to tax folks who are making who have net worth of more than $50 million. So far, what are your thoughts, just very briefly, because we're running out of time, on her campaign and then the entrance this week of Kamala Harris, California senator, is also seeking the nomination. Tom?
I think Warren's plan's actually kind of interesting. There's been a lot of proposals out there on 70, 90% tax rates on income, and she actually has really rejected that and argued that what you should do is focus on wealth. Now, implementing that strikes me as crazy because that means all of a sudden every one of us is going to have to file a new return testifying to our actual net worth and things like that, which is going to be kind of complicated. Many people don't even know what their net worth is. I'm also not sure that that's going to get after people like Jeff Bezos, whose net worth, if you think about it, is not in dollars, but really in the potential value of the stock that he owns. And I'm not sure how you take that away. Having said that, her entrance, Kamala Harris's entrance, the entrance of a number of other people into this tells you that this is going to be a very robust Democratic primary. We're going to see a lot of new faces coming in, as well as I expect some old faces like Joe Biden. Wouldn't surprise me if we had 10 to 15 people, serious people in this race.
Mariella?
Well, I'm excited. You know, I can't do an analysis. Like, I'm not an economist. But what I can say is I think that I like that both Warren's proposal, AOC's is making people have a conversation. I saw a pretty interesting quote where an executive, I won't call him out specifically, said, a 70% tax rate, that's un-American. Where did you get that from? And someone said, America. That's what it used to be, right? And so I think we haven't had a conversation about what makes sense and what is fair. And we may not end up exactly with Warren's proposal, but at least we're having a robust conversation about something we need to talk about.
All right. Well, sorry for the shortened conversation today with the breaking news that the government shutdown is over, at least for now. The president announced, President Trump announced that about an hour ago. He says the government shutdown will be over until February 15th. That'll give everyone time to try to negotiate a deal on border security. Tom Keene, former Boston City Councilor and regular contributor to WBUR's Ideas and Opinion page, Cognoscenti. Thanks for coming in.
My pleasure.
Also, Reverend Mariama White-Hammond, pastor at the New Roots AME Church in Dorchester. Thank you.
Good to be here.
Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Deborah Becker, and this is Radio Boston.
Wait. Don't go yet.
Because you already know how to download a podcast.
But if you have any other tech or life question, maybe we can help you. WBUR is working on a new show, and we need your tech questions.
Or maybe your parents' questions. Just click that little phone-shaped app on your cell phone and leave a message. 617-917-4717.
Yes, we know. How quaint. A phone call. But give it a try. 617-917-4717.